ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Today we're doing text 7. Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Dasatala gatamahim
Dasatala gatamahim
Udharishyanupadata
Udharishyanupadata
Yagnesha saukaram
bapu Yagnesha saukaram bapu
Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Vasatala gatang mahim
Vasatala gatang mahim
Udharishyanupadata
Udharishyanupadata
Yagnesha saukaram bapu
Yagnesha saukaram bapu
Vatiyam tu bhavayasya
Vatiyam tu bhavayasya
Vasatalam gatang mahim
Udharishyanupadata
Yagnesha saukaram bapu
Yagnesha saukaram bapu
Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Dvitiyam tu bhavayasya
Vasatala gatamahim
Vasatala gatamahim
Udharishyanupadata
Dvitiyam, the second,
two,
but, bhavaya,
for
the welfare,
asya,
of the earth,
vasatala,
of the lowest region,
gatam,
having gone, mahim, the earth,
udarishan,
lifting,
upadita,
established.
Yagnesha,
the proprietor or the supreme enjoyer.
Saukaram,
hoggish.
Bapu,
incarnation. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation. And for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth from the nether regions of the universe. Report. The indication is that for each and every incarnation of the personality of Godhead, the particular function executed is also mentioned. There cannot be any incarnation without a particular function, and such functions are always extraordinary. They're impossible for any living being to perform. The incarnation of the boar was to take the earth out of Pluto's region of filthy matter. Picking up something from a filthy place is done by a boar, and the all-powerful personality of Gaia displayed this wonder to the Asuras who had hidden the earth in such a filthy place. There is nothing impossible for the personality of Godhead, and although he played the part of a boar, by the devotees he is worshipped, staying always in transcendence. So we're continuing in this third chapter, following up on the questions of the sages. Specifically, the third questions of the sages in the previous chapters was to ask about the Lord's incarnations and describe them. So first, we talked about the Purusha incarnations. Those were described. And then yesterday, or the last class, the four Kumaras were mentioned. So these incarnations are either direct incarnations, direct expansions of Krishna, or they may be his empowered representatives, living entities who perform some particular purpose on behalf of the Lord, such as the Kumaras. So today we're talking about, they're called the second incarnation, is the boar incarnation, or Varaha. As you can see, as we go through these, they're not particularly grouped in terms of category. Well, we had the Purusha incarnations, but now there's some Leela avatars, Shaktivesh avatars, different ones that are listed. And I was thinking that they might be listed in order of appearance, but actually I tried to look this up, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the listing is simply an enumeration, it's not necessarily a chronology. So they seem to be some of the ones earlier are given first, you know, in the beginning of the creation, but it's not necessarily strictly one after another. So when it says the second or the third, it doesn't mean that they necessarily appeared in that order. It's the way that they're being listed here by Sutta Goswami. So the important thing here that Prabhupada is mentioning is that each incarnation comes for a specific purpose to fulfill. They don't just appear whimsically, arbitrarily. They come at very specified times, which are given in the scriptures, and they have specific purposes. Of course, there is a general, overall reason that all of the avatars come. Krishna appears, as he describes in the Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Puritranayam sadhanam vinashaya chudishtakam dharma samstapanartayo sambhavami yoge yoge. Three reasons are given: to deliver the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, and to reestablish the principles of religion. And Krishna says, I appear myself millennium after millennium. So many, many appearances of the Lord for these basic purposes. For example, when Krishna appeared, he obviously spoke the Bhagavad Gita, reestablishing religious principles, killed many, many demons in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, throughout the time that he was on this planet. And he gave relationships with many, many devotees, gave protection to his devotees. And in fact, this is really his most important reason for coming in all these incarnations is for the devotees. Prabhupada explains in a very nice purport to 4.8, Prabhupada says, as far as the atheists are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear to destroy them, as he did with the demons, Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees, were always harassed by the demoniac. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. And this is the important sentence here. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously. Therefore, it's said here that the Lord comes to deliver devotees and vanquish the demon miscreants. And therefore, he appears in these different incarnations and fulfills many purposes. So now we're turning to the appearance of the boar incarnation, Lord Varaha. So the purpose that's being mentioned here was to save the Earth planet and reestablish universal order. The Earth planet had fallen. It says the nether regions or the area of Pluto. It was at the bottom of the Garbhodakshay Ocean. Down at the whole cosmic universe is half filled with the water, the Garbhodak ocean water. and the Earth had fallen all the way down, which is probably, I don't know how many billions of miles, but long way, very, very deep into the bottom of the water. So the saving of the Earth is mentioned here, but in the third canto, there's a further expansion or further explanation of Lord Brahma's pastimes, where he also is killing the, well, it's mentioned briefly in the pastime of saving the Earth planet, that he also killed the demon Hiranyaksha. That's in chapter 13 of canto 3, the whole pastime of lifting the Garbhodak ocean. And it just mentioned very briefly at that point that he also happened to kill Hiranyaksha. And then it goes on, then there's a long story, a few more chapters of Jai and Vijay, the gatekeepers, and Vaikuntha, and how they had to take the curse of becoming demons three times, and their first birth was, of course, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. And so Hiranyakasipu, being the first brother, challenged Lord Varaha, and there was a huge battle between them where Varaha kills the demon Hiranyaksha. And of course, later he takes care of Hiranyakasipu as Nrsingadev. So there are two different appearances of Varaha, actually, and it's explained by Srila Prabhupada, and he actually quotes Jiva Goswami and also Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who also quotes Rupa Goswami, so it's pretty consistent with all of our acharyas that there were two different appearances of Lord Varaha. One was in the white incarnation, which was in the Swayambhuva Manu at the very beginning of creation, which is the one we're hearing about first here. And then later, he came in the Chakshusha Manvantara as the red or the black incarnation. That's when he kills Hiranyaksha. But it's described that both appearances are combined by Maitreya in the third canto when he's describing this. So they're sort of just put together, because they were both different pastimes of Lord Varaha. So we just combined them. Why not? Because they're both wonderful pastimes, and they may have actually been a little bit different times, but nevertheless, we hear them together in the Bhagavad. So, in this first appearance, the Earth has fallen to Garbhodak Ocean, and Varaha appears from the nostril of Lord Brahma and as the boar incarnation. Now we might ask, why did he appear as a boar? Interesting question. You know, sometimes we think of course, a boar is a pig or a hog. A boar is simply a male hog. And we think, well, you know, he's fighting as a pig or a... Well, sometimes we have ideas. We think of, who was that Piglet? He was in some children's book, you know, Winnie the Pooh or something. You know, like there's some cute little farm animals. They're not. Hogs are very large. They're actually a little bit dangerous. I've had some personal experience with that. my grandparents' farm in Illinois, they and their neighbors raised pigs and hogs, and I don't know, we were kind of, I don't know why, we were idiots, rascal kids. We'd go in and kind of harass the pigs, you know, and they would chase us, and we'd have to run as fast as we could to get over the fence before they caught us, because they could really do some damage. They're like 500 pounds, you know, they're big. And in Florida and many other states in the South particularly, they have these wild boars. You ever heard of them? They hunt them. So I mean, it's like they're feral pigs, but they're crossed with these other kind of boars or whatever. And they're considered to be the most dangerous animal in Florida, actually. They're more dangerous than alligators. So anyway, and they have big tusks. You know, they can really do some damage. So yes, a boar can be a very strong, ferocious animal. And the other thing, of course, is because they have their snout, their tusks, hogs can, you know, root out and eat anything, and it's described that became a boar because they had to go to a filthy place at the bottom of the ocean and pick up the earth. And yes, you will see hogs do that. They're in the mud, they're anywhere, rooting around for whatever they can get. So this is a pastime. I thought before we talk about it more, I would just read through this pastime. This is, of course, from the third canto, chapter 13, verses 14 to 32. And this is the first pastime where Lord Varaha saves the earth. So, first of all, Manu, of course, is born from Brahma, and his job is to create progenies, the father of mankind, and to get everything going in the earth, in the world, in the universe. But there's a problem. And the problem is that the earth planet has fallen into the ocean. So Manu speaks to his father, Lord Brahma, and says, O powerful Lord, O killer of all sins, I shall die by your order. Please let me know my place and that of the living entities born of me. O master demigods, please attempt to lift the earth, which is merged in the great water. It is the dwelling place for all the living entities. It can be done by your endeavor and the mercy of the Lord. Sri Maitreya said, thus seeing the earth merged in the water, Brahma gave his attention for a long time how it could be lifted. Brahma thought, well, I have been engaged in the process of creation. The earth has been inundated by a deluge and has gone down into the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in this matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. This is a pretty amazing story, isn't it? The boar comes out of Lord Brahma's nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb, naturally. O descendant Bharata, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation, as gigantic as a great elephant. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with the great Brahmins like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. First of all, this boar was seen as no longer than the tip of my thumb, and within a moment he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmins by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all directions. And the great sages and thinkers who were residents of Janaloka, Papaloka, in Satyaloka, heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Boar, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord. They chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. Playing like an elephant, he entered in the water after roaring again and replied to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of Vedic prayers, and thus he understood the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental, yet he had the body of a hog. He searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee Brahmins engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. Diving into the water like a giant mountain, Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and the two waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Boar very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then, his anger glowing like a Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. Thereupon Lord Boar killed the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and the tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as the elephant becomes reddish from digging in purple earth. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offered respectful obeisances unto the Lord. So, of course, it's very important to understand the transcendental position of all the incarnations of Krishna, all the incarnations of the Lord, and particularly this incarnation of Lord Varaha, who comes in somewhat of an unusual form as a hog. I wanted to read Srila Prabhupada's purport to this one of these verses, which says, he was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. Purport. Srila Prabhupada says, we should always remember that although the body of a hog is material, the hog form of the Lord is not materially contaminated. It is not possible for an earthly hog to assume a gigantic form spreading throughout the sky, beginning from the Satchaloka. His body is always transcendental in all circumstances. Therefore, the assumption of the form of a boar is only his pastime. His body is all Vedas, or transcendental. But since he has assumed the form of a boar, he began to search out the earth by smelling, just like a hog. The Lord can perfectly play the part of any living entity. The gigantic feature of the boar was certainly very fearful for all non-devotees, but to the pure devotees of the Lord, he was not at all fearful. On the contrary, he was so pleasingly glancing upon his devotees that all of them felt transcendental happiness. So we need to remember that nothing is impossible for God. His pastimes are unlimited. His expansions are unlimited. He has so many variegated energies that he can manifest in so many different ways. If we limit what God can do, then how is he God? Sometimes Prabhupada would say that. If people say, well, how can Krishna do this? How can he be that? Well, you'd say, how can he not? How can you limit God? How can you limit God to one incarnation or one son or one expansion? But only this is God. His incarnations and expansions are unlimited. And he comes in many, many different forms, many, many different, and even in many, many different species of life, as we are seeing. And when Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada says, Sri Prahlad Maharaj said in his prayer, my Lord, you manifest as many incarnations as there are species of life, namely the aquatics, the vegetables, the reptiles, the birds, the beasts, the men, the demigods, just for the maintenance of the faithful and annihilation of the unfaithful. So we see how Krishna comes in many species of life. He comes as a turtle, as kurma, matsya, the fish. He comes now as the hog, varaha. There's a horse in incarnation, Hayagriva, right? The half-lion, half-man, Nrisingadeva, and of course many human-like incarnations, like Rama, Krishna, etc. Comes as a dwarf Brahmin, Vamanadeva. So he has unlimited ways that he can come. So many different types of expansions. So why? Why are there so many different incarnations? Why doesn't he just come as Krishna or just come in one way? It's because of his devotees. Krishna is appreciated differently by different devotees. They have different rasas. They have different relationships with Krishna. It's part of Krishna's unlimited expansions, his unlimited pleasure potency, that he can enjoy different relationships with so many different living entities. And each living entity has the ability to have his own unique relationship with Krishna. We all have a unique relationship according to whatever our constitutional position, our Sanatan Dharma, our original constitutional position. We have that relationship with Krishna. So devotees appreciate Krishna in all of his forms, but often have a very specific form they're particularly attracted to. I was just thinking there was a couple of different devotees in Chaitanya Lila, and of course, when Lord Chaitanya came, he taught worship of Radha and Krishna. So obviously, Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all of Lord Chaitanya's teachings and his primary disciples, Rupa and Satyam Goswami, all taught devotion to Krishna is the highest. But yet there were some devotees, like Rupa and Sanatana's brother, Anupam, right? Mm-hmm. He was a devotee of Lord Ramachandra. Yes. And even though he could be convinced intellectually that Krishna was supreme, he could in his heart not give up his devotion to Ramachandra. And Lord Chaitanya proved of that. And there were others. Wasn't Murari Gupta also a devotee of Lord Ramachandra? So some devotees, they have different relationships. They have different rasas. Prahlad Maharaj is always a devotee of Lord Nrisingadeva, eternally, etc. And think of Bhishmadev on his lying on the bed of arrows, and he's giving such wonderful instructions. And he's talking about appreciating all varieties of rasa, and he praises the gopis. Bhishmadev, the great warrior, he praises the gopis as having the highest devotion. But that wasn't his rasa, was it? He was attracted to Parthasarathi, to Krishna, being Arjuna's chariot driver on the battle of Kurukshetra. That was his rasa. So Krishna attracts our minds to his unlimited forms and unlimited pastimes. The Brahma Samhita, 533, says, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadam, Anantarupam. So Anantarupam, his unlimited forms. So we want to hear about these unlimited forms of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada says, one must hear about the avatars. Narrations about such avatars are called avatar katha, the narrations of Krishna's expansions. Hearing and chanting these narrations is completely pious. Srinvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana. One who hears and chants can become punya, purified of material contamination. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that we, just by hearing about these incarnations, one becomes pious, one becomes purified. They take away all of our material understandings, material misgivings, material contaminations, attractions, attachments. Perhaps not immediately, it may take some time, but continual hearing about Krishna, Krishna's energies, the philosophy of Krishna, all Krishna's expansions, incarnations, has this wonderful effect of attracting our minds and purifying the heart. So Prabhupada often would say that all of Krishna's pastimes are relishable and purifying. Shuddha Kirti was saying once that he was reading Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, and there was one of the demon-killing pastimes that Prabhupada seemed to really like, and he was kind of chuckling. And then, so the next night, when he was going to read Krishna book, he went to find another one, similar demon-killing. Prabhupada said, no, just pick anywhere. It says any place, any pastimes of Krishna are relishable. They're all equal. So it wasn't that one was relishable and another one wasn't. They all are. And we find this when we go back, and I think that was one of the really wonderful, for me, one of the real benefits as we went through the whole 10th canto, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. I had forgotten all the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Sometimes we don't think about all these things that happened in Dwarka and Mathura, but they were all really, really incredible, really wonderful. And it all helps to attract us. It brings our mind under control, closer and closer to Krishna. We just simply keep hearing about these pastimes. And he acts wonderfully in all of these different pastimes. He displays his opulence. In the this is from same chapter 13, verse 43. Probably, the verse is, who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. And Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, a common man is also struck with wonder by the wonderful action of material nature, and he gives all credit to the cosmic manifestation. The learned Krishna conscious person, however, knows well that behind the cosmic manifestation is the brain of Krishna. Since Krishna can direct the wonderful cosmic manifestation, it is not at all wonderful for him to assume the gigantic form of a boar and thus deliver the earth from the mire of the water. A devotee is therefore not astonished to see the wonderful boar, because he knows the Lord is able to act more wonderfully by his potencies, which are inconceivable to the brain of even the most erudite scientist. Of course, one of the reasons that we accept these incarnations of Krishna is because all incarnations, all bona fide incarnations of the Lord, are described in the revealed scriptures. They're not manufactured, they're not made up, they're not somebody's imagination or somebody's wishful thinking, yes, now I have become God, this and that. No. And so within the scriptures, the Vedic literature, we find very authentic, very detailed descriptions of the incarnations when Krishna comes and performs his different activities and pastimes in the universe. So this particular chapter 3 is called, it's about the incarnations, and it describes many, many different incarnations of Krishna. So these are all there, given to us in the scriptures. Now, of course, it's popular, especially in Kali Yuga, for many people to think there are different incarnations, or this person's an incarnation or an avatar. So, you know, we see people like Ramakrishna 100 years ago or whatever, who was considered an incarnation by many people, right? In Bengal, many people think he was an incarnation of Krishna or an incarnation of Durga or somebody, right?
No, he said, "I am Ram, I am Krishna."
Oh, he's all of them. Yeah, meet Ram and Krishna. Speaks Ram and Krishna together. Even better, yeah. So, not just Krishna, but Ram and Krishna together. Yeah, that was his name. And even this Sai Baba, you know, because he could do a few miracles. He had some mystic power. And therefore, many, many people think that they are somehow, this is God. These are incarnations. But actually, we see that they cannot perform the kind of activities that Krishna's incarnations Prabhupada would say, all right, ask them to lift over downhill. Ask them to expand into a huge form. They can't do that, you know. And it's amazing how you run into this. I was many, many years ago in the 70s, I was at the Miami Temple, and my family and we were down at the beach, I don't know, Miami Beach or Key Biscayne or wherever we went. And this kind of hippie guy comes up to me and goes, oh, you're devotees of Krishna. I go, yeah. He says, I'm so glad you're here. And he told me how he was actually Krishna. So I guess I was supposed to offer my obeisances or something. But anyway, we had an interesting discussion, but I think he was basically somewhat too many drugs or mentally ill. But, you know, this is the kind of thinking that's there. It's very cheap. Like, anyone can become God, anyone can become Krishna, or we all become God, right? Or, you know, we all are Krishna. That's the Mayavadi philosophy. But no, these incarnations are very, very special. Although they're infinite, and they are, you know, Krishna comes in so many different varieties. They're all equal to Krishna. They have the same power as Krishna, and they're all described and forecasted in the Vedas. So within the Vedas, within the Bhagavatam and the Puranas and the literature, we hear about Lord Buddha coming. We hear about Lord Kalki, who are yet to come. And even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was forecast in several different Puranas and different Vedic literatures. So not only are past incarnations described, but even the future ones. Sanatana Goswami asked Lord Chaitanya how one can know an actual avatar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, as in other ages, an incarnation is accepted according to the direction of Shastra. In this age of Kali, an incarnation of God can be accepted in that way. Of course, he didn't want to say that he was the incarnation of Kali Yuga, but he was giving the indication, you can see through the revealed scriptures and make your own conclusion. Then he said, the Vedic literatures are composed by the omniscient Mahamuni Vyasadeva and are evidence of all spiritual existence. Only through these revealed scriptures can all conditioned souls attain knowledge. So this is our standard. This is our source. Incarnations are those that are found and mentioned in the revealed scriptures. So, I wasn't sure whether we'd have time or not. I think we do. I'll continue the reading of the second pastime of Lord Varaha, which was killing Hiranyaksha. This was always one I like. I don't know if any of you remember those old radio tapes they used to have. They had these dramatizations that we had tapes of different pastimes of Krishna they did in Los Angeles. And I remember this one that my kids would listen to. And, you know, so a lot of these verses, they stand out to me because of because of hearing those kids' tapes of the pastimes. They were really nice. They were nicely done. Okay. I don't think I'll read the whole thing, but a lot of it. This is from chapters 18 and 19, canto 3. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daicha paid little heed to the words of Varuna. In other words, this is Krishna, you know, cool it. O dear Vidura, he learned from Narada the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. He saw there the all-powerful Personality of Godhead in his boar incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of his tusks and robbing him of his splendor with its reddish eyes. The demon laughed, "Oh, an amphibious beast!" The demon addressed the Lord, "Oh, best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. The earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You rascal, you have been nourished by your enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. Oh, fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you." Yeah, right. The demon continued, "When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots." Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain. But seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. The demon, who had golden hair on his head and fearful tusks, gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, "Are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures." The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. The demon, who had a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body, chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words. In order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. The Personality of Godhead said, "Indeed, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you. One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you are indulging, for you are bound up by the laws of death. Certainly we have stolen the charge of inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time, because having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I now have no place to go. You were supposed to be the commander of many foot soldiers, and now you may take prompt steps to overthrow us. Give up all your foolish talk and wipe out the cares of your kith and kin by slaying us. One may be proud, yet one does not deserve a seat in assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised word." Sri Maitreya said the demon, thus being challenged by the Personality of Godhead, became angry and agitated, and he trembled in anger like a challenged cobra, hissing indignantly, all of his senses shaken by wrath. The demon quickly sprang upon the Lord and dealt him a blow with his powerful mace. The Lord, however, by moving slightly aside, dodged the violent mace blow aimed at his breast by the enemy, just as an accomplished yogi would elude death. The Personality of Godhead now exhibited his anger and rushed to meet the demon, who bit his lips in rage, took up his mace again, and began repeatedly brandishing it about. Then with his mace, he struck the Lord. He struck the enemy on the right of his brow, but since the demon was expert in fighting, O gentle Vidura, he protected himself by a maneuver of his own mace. In this way, the demon, Hiranyaksha, and the Lord, the Personality of Godhead, struck each other with huge maces, each enraged and seeking his own victory. There was a keen rivalry between the two combatants. Both had sustained injuries on their bodies from the blows of the other's maces, and each grew more and more enraged at the smell of blood on his person. In their eagerness to win, they performed maneuvers of various kinds, and their contest looked like an encounter between two forceful bulls for the sake of the cow. O descendant of Kuru, Brahma, the most independent demigod of the universe, accompanied by his followers, came to see the terrible fight for the sake of the world between the demon and the Personality of Godhead, who appeared in the form of a boar. Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, you are infallible. Please kill the sinful demon before the demoniac hour arrives. And he presents another formidable approach favorable to him. You can kill him by your internal potency without a doubt. Now we go to chapter 19. This is probably one of the most extensive battle scenes that I can remember in any of the Bhagavatam stories. Even Hiranyakasipu and Samini are fairly short, just a few verses. But this is quite a battle. It's really good. Okay. The Lord, who appeared from nostril Brahma, sprang in aimless mace to the chin of his enemy. The Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. Interesting, even the demons, you know, had some sense of chivalry. As the Lord's mace fell to ground, a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowd of demigods and rishis. The personality of God acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan discus. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hand, the Lord contended to close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants, who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti. There issued in every direction strange expressions uttered by those who were witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you, pray dispatch him, play no more with him." Anyway, the battle goes on for some time, and finally we'll take it up the last few verses. The Lord said, "Take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Challenged by these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying toward him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would seize a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. He now took a trident which was as rapacious as a flaming fire and hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against a holy Brahmin. Interesting metaphors here. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident shone brightly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore it to pieces with his disc of Sudarshan, which had a sharp-edged rim, even as Indra cut off the wing of Garuda. Okay. Anyway, he conjures up all sorts of, mystic power, demonic devices. It says, now the demon began to strike the Lord with his hard fist. The Lord had hooks just slapped him in the root of the ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hit the demon Vritta. Thus struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to reel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets, his arms and legs broken, the hair of his head scattered. He fell down dead, like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Brahma and the others arrived on the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground, biting his lip. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who could meet such a blessed death?" Because, of course, anyone killed by Krishna is liberated. Brahma continued, "He was struck by the forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, this crest jewel of Devi's sons has cast off his mortal coil." All right. All glories to Lord Brahma. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. Question or comments? Yes, Shesha Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Is there any description of what happened to the earth? I mean, why did the earth... How did it end up there? I mean, I've heard things like the gold was taken and got off balance.
It wasn't described very clearly here. It just says that, as the Brahma says, while he wasn't paying attention, almost like while he was creating, that it sank down. Is that described in another place, the mining of gold causing it to sink?
I seem to remember something like that. I don't know.
I don't know if it's in the same connection or not.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kirtan.
One Swami, he said that that Hiranyaksha was hoarding the gold and it created an imbalance on the earth, and so it slipped from its orbit, you know, and fell in the Garbhagatha Ocean.
Okay.
And another point is Srimad Bhagavatam did not state where were the living entities. I mean, where did they take shelter or anything? You know, because if the earth fell into the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean, certainly they can't be on that earth, right?
He said all the living entities were there.
On the earth?
Yeah. Yeah, and in one of the verses, because I was wondering about that too, and it said that all living entities were there on the earth. I don't know how that happened.
But since that was like the beginning of creation, it couldn't be too much entity.
I'm not sure.
That's why.
Prangavendra, can you give us any insight on this?
I remember reading this beautiful pastime of Bhumi Devi, the Mother Earth. Mm. She was offering her prayers. Barahadev, after the whole earth was lifted, and then while she is praying, many things took place. She was expressing her affection. As a result, the Lord gave her pregnancy with one son, and Mahaprabhu talks about that to Murari Gupta, that everybody will get love of Godhead. No, Mahaprabhu one day actually he took the form of Varaha, the peak form, in Murari Gupta's house. Chaitanya Bhagavat gives all details.
Hmm.
He says, I have come to introduce this Radha Krishna Prem while he's taking the Varaha form.
Hmm.
So it's interesting how he related Radha Krishna's worship is high.
Hmm.
And at that time he says, he will give love of Godhead to everyone except those who are offensive, including my son, Narakasura. And that Narakasura was the son of Bhumi Devi and Varahadev.
Hmm.
So he was very clearly mentioned like this.
Hmm.
So in that prayers also, Bhumi Devi asked the Varahadev, how is this possible that it was sink in a water? Then generally when underwater, everything became stale or deteriorated. But one place is so beautiful. It's lit, untouched. Nothing happened. Everything is going on in this place. And then Barahadev says, that's my house, Vrindavan.
Mm.
So Vrindavan is always intact,
eternal. Oh, even under the water.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting. Uh-huh. Raghunatha?
Every time I think of this pastime, it's pretty amazing when you think. It described how Lord Bohr balanced the earth on his tusks like a ball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can't even fathom the extent of the earth planet that we're on.
Mm.
You know?
There you are.
And then Lord Bohr has to be huge. So it shows that Krishna is bigger than the biggest. You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's true. You know, I mean, they say he's a gigantic form filling you, but that's a very good point in the relationship to the earth, which is, you know, 8,000 miles in diameter, and it's just like a little ball at the end of his chest. Yeah, very amazing. Okay, thank you all so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I love you.
Send it. sediment from where is this filled? These are all technical questions because they're not exactly holes. They're just areas for argument. And I'm not arguing. I'm just pointing out that there's something that's described as filth at the bottom.
Right.
And then the earth, according to the line of one of the stories, because there's two incarnations of Varaha, the one who fell out of orbit is the same personality, the obvious earth. He extracted so much gold from the earth. Yeah. But the earth is more, it's a cushion by its atmosphere. The earth's matter includes its atmosphere. So it's has buoyancy regardless. But somehow or other with the pastime. And then it sunk all the way through what these Plutonian area. Pluto is like a non-existence. Anyway, we're indicating the lowest level. Yeah. It's just word level. And then by his purpose, he brought it up. And then, in order to fight, he invested his buoyancy in the planet. But he's investing all the planets are floating in the purport in the Nantha about Lord Ramachandra. Prabhupada says the planets are floating weightless in space like swabs of cotton. So it's a different, we have this earth concept like it's earth, the dirt, but actually the earth it includes its atmosphere. Yeah. And then, so it's protected, that's why I think, they're still there, inhabitants, and they can exist while they're in the depth. Yeah, I mean, because they're cushions, but then the concept of falling out of the orbit, it's your cushion, because within the planet, you're in the dark. He's outside, the scale. Thank you. Some people